Broadcasting from AnyUpMagazine.com and 620 WDAE AM, the sports animal in Tampa Bay, Florida.
With your hosts, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's time to Ante Up.
It's January 30th, 2009, and you're listening to the best poker podcast on the internet. And we are proud to say that we have finally joined the 21st century.
We are actually on the internets right now.
It's a perfect fit, you know. We can almost have it stream live to our website.
We're in the middle of the tubes right now, exploring.
We're in the tubes. So we decided that Matt Savage, famous tournament director, is in the Philippines. And instead of ringing up a huge bill at the radio station, we thought we would try Skype today. So we're doing the whole show on Skype.
Yeah, kind of cool. But don't worry, we'll be back in the Clear Channel WDAE Sports Animal beautiful, friendly confines studios next week.
Mike Faso, our good friend The Bard, he's out at the LAPC this week, and he's playing some of the undercard events, and he's going to come back and join us in the studio, so I know a lot of our listeners are going to be happy about that.
Oh, people love it when Faso's on the show.
I don't know why.
You know, he's a renaissance man, more so than you.
I thought I was your renaissance man.
Wow, there's room for many more Renaissance men in this earth.
Well, it's been a big week of announcements, especially with the World Series. I know you're pretty excited about that. Why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, you know, a lot of people were wondering, hey, where is the World Series of Poker schedule? It should have been announced already, and they just wondered what's going on. And here's the inside scoop. Jeffrey Pollack was waiting for the Apes schedule to be released. before he announced the World Series schedule, because he wanted to be sure that he wasn't going to miss any of the Apes events. So he wanted to plan some of the lesser WSOP events around so he could participate in Apes. So that's the true story.
Yeah, you know, he's not stupid. Matter of fact, when he plays in the Apes events with us, look for the avatar that says, "I'm smarter than you." And that'll be Jeffrey Pollack. Be sure to knock him out of the tournament. I like look at all these changes, and I have to agree with a lot of them.
Well, yeah, there's certainly lots of stuff that people are going to be talking about this year. You know, they're always marketing geniuses there, so they always get us talking about stuff. So the first one, a $40,000 40th anniversary tournament that will kick this thing off. 40,000 clams, Chris.
Good God.
That is a lot.
It's because it's been around 40 years, they're going to have a $40,000 tournament. Does that mean, like, next year they're going to have a $41,000 tournament?
That I don't know. They went to great pains to say that they do not expect this to be an annual event. But, you know, it's the anniversary, and they wanted to have something like that. And they also were a little sheepish. They understand that it's perhaps not the best economic climate to be introducing a $40,000 tournament to the World Series schedule. But, you know, hey, you know, here's the thing about the tough economic climates. People still got money, so, you know, they're going to spend money on what they think is worth it. So there's probably going to be, a good number of pros or folks that can get some good backing that won't blink an eye at this.
Yeah, but there's one thing they won't be able to spend their money on over and over again, and that's rebuy tournaments.
Gone, all of them.
They're gone. What? Oh, my God. And I tell you, it's like... I'm kind of happy they're gone.
You're happy?
Well, because I don't, you know, it's like if you're playing baseball against the Yankees and you beat them in the bottom of the ninth, 8-2, the Yankees say, no, we got a bigger payroll than you. We're going to keep playing until we win. That's just not right. So if you're playing poker and you lose all your chips, that's what it means. You lost all your chips. You can't play anymore. So I kind of like the idea of freeze out. So you're done.
Well, you're certainly in the same camp with Daniel Nugrano, who, of course, is on one of the WSOP Players Advisory Councils. And his comment essentially was, this is not a change in policy. This is essentially just fixing a problem that's always existed.
Yeah.
And his feeling is that, and some other people, that poker tournaments should go to the skillful winner, not the person with the biggest bank account that can continue to rebuy.
Well, do you think that there is skill in a rebuy? And there's definitely a strategy involved, so there is some skill there. It's just not really your poker skills. It's more of your management skills, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously... I mean, anytime you you enter a tournament, you have to look at the structure and how it's set up. And, a very best... The player who can actually navigate that particular structure the best, that's a skill. So that should count, right?
I think so. It's just that... I just don't like the idea of it, but if that's what they're presenting and everyone is joining that tournament knowing that's what kind of tournament it is, then sure, there's skill involved and they should be able to do it. But I'm just glad they don't have it anymore. I think they're kind of foolish.
You know, they had like 90 of them last year. So, you know, I don't understand why they couldn't just have one. Is one rebuy tournament going to ruin all the history that Binion's put in the World Series of Poker and everything that Harris has done from it since they've taken it over? One rebuy tournament, really? We've got one rebuy tournament in Apes and we only have 12 events. They got 57 at this year's World Series.
Hey, you know what I was just thinking? I'm going to take that little clip that you said. You and Daniel Negreanu are of the same mind. I'm going to keep that clip, and I'm going to use it out of context, like throw up the
All right, now I'm going to have to apologize to Daniel. But all right, so here's a crazy theory I have. All right. So his argument is that the tournament should go to the skillful player, and rebuys you keep buying. But I wonder if, in general, that whole idea doesn't wash with me, because here's the thing. Let's say you or I actually went crazy, mortgaged the house, and bought straight into the $50,000 horse tournament, which, you know, essentially is a pro's way of saying, hey, stay away from our tournament.
Yeah, right.
Because we want this just to be pros. You kids can go play in that the main event thing. and if we're playing the horse, I would be literally holding onto the rails of my seat, probably looking for the rails on the seat because I don't have rails on the seat. But, you know, I would be tense through it all because $50,000 is life-changing money for me. Now, you sit down with, you know, some of these big-time pros, or let's say even Bill Gates decides to put down his bridge game with Warren Buffett in play. It's a drop in the bucket for them. So I think that plays into whether you could afford to win a tournament. And might alter your play a little bit.
I love your Bill Gates thing. It's like, yeah, I'm sitting down next to this guy. It's just not fair. I mean, it's just not fair.
I mean, it's a little different. I'll grant you that. But, you know, if that's the best argument they can come up with is that, you know, somebody... You know, I like to play rebuy tournaments because I go into them not planning on rebuying.
Right, and that's the thing.
I know some people say it's not a good strategy, but for me it is because here's the thing. I'm going to get a bunch of... I'm going to let other people juice the prize pool up for me, and I'm going to, you know, if I cash, I'm going to make a lot more on my money.
Right, and I think Michael Grotz wrote an article. It might have been in one of our rival magazines. It was something about, you know... It's not that you know, shouldn't ever rebuy, and it's not that you should rebuy too much. You should just go in with, this is how many I'm going to rebuy, because you think this tournament's going to play at this certain level, and that's what you agree to beforehand, and then that's your strategy, and then if you follow your strategy, then it's not like a rebuy, then it's just like any other tournament, really.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, you know, if you're going to do a rebuy, it's going to have to be somewhere other than the WSOP. But Chris, there is one... new thing that the WSOP is doing, because they do recognize that the economy is bad. Even though they added a $40,000 tournament, they are going to get started pretty early this year with a $1,000 quote-unquote stimulus special.
Stimulus. It's going to stimulate the economy.
So, yeah, so it's going to be $1,000. That's going to be the cheapest one to get in. They're hoping to, or they're expecting this will be the largest non-main event ever. Now, Chris, you were once a world record holder in that particular category, correct?
Yes, but the record was broken last year, so I've used up all of the tissues crying over it. I don't need to cry anymore. I'm over holding my world record, and so yeah, I think that this could be I expect like 5,000 people to play in this thing.
Well, yeah, I think that's what the early expectations are, and that would be, I think they said like a $700,000 prize for the winner. So that's you know, a 700 times your buy-in victory. That's pretty cool. Now, but here's the kind of thing that I think is funny is, $40,000. But you know, we gave you a $1,000 stimulus special, so that's all right. You know. It's kind of like these guys that have like the V24 Hummers that they take down to the grocery store, and then they get home and they buy some carbon offsets on the web, and all is well now. I made up for it. I planted a tree in Guatemala.
Oh my God!
Here's the WSOP. You know, oh yeah, you know, we put a $40,000 tournament this year, but hey, we gave all the peasants a $1,000 tournament they could get in.
Well, here's the good thing: I had my house appraised for $41,000.
Yes.
So if I mortgage it, I can play in both tournaments.
Excellent. Very good. Very good. You're on the spectrums then.
Yeah. Sorry you lost 40 grand, but here's a $1,000 tournament to appease you. Hey, Scott, you got to tell me what this triple chance is. Now, isn't this essentially a rebuy tournament?
You know, I think this is a rebuy tournament with a costume on it.
Costume? It's wearing a mask.
not really a rebuy. No, it's not a rebuy tournament. But, you know, you pull the mask off like, you know, Shaggy and Scooby. And guess what? The Meddling Kids have found a rebuy tournament in this year's World Series. So they got this triple chance thing. You know, we got an expansive press release for the WSOP. They do a very good job of taking care of us media. But it had absolutely no explanation of what this triple chance tournament is. But it looks like a card player did some digging. And it sounds like you will get two extra stacks of chips. Kind of like, you know, a reserve tank, Chris, you know, and... When you're driving on the freeway and the little gas light comes on, you're like, no, that's all right. I've got a little reserve tank, so I'm not going to stop at the flying pilot right now.
Hey, you know, I was thinking that, you know, would have been better was they're in the desert. You know, the camel has the reserve tank in the hump.
Yes.
Maybe we should have gone that route with this one.
All right, so I guess my understanding is you start with a stack of chips, and apparently if you go broke anytime in the first two levels, you may tap one of these extra, one or both of these extra stacks of chips to kind of extend your life. It's kind of like a lifeline, Chris. Like phone a friend. But, you know, when you're in it, don't phone me because I'm not going to be able to help you. you might want to do the 50-50 or ask the audience instead.
Yeah, well, you know, the thing is, though, is you better use them up because, you know, it'll be just like, you know, hey, calling up your dad on the show and saying, hey, dad, I'm just calling to tell you that I don't need to let you know that Richard Nixon was the only president ever on Laughing because I just want $1 million. Now here's the thing. This definitely is a rebuy tournament. I don't care what anybody says.
Well, it's an extra chips thing. I mean, I guess if you go back to the whole Daniel argument, no, you're not putting any more extra money into the pot. You just have a couple extra shots at it. So it's definitely not a freeze out, obviously. But you're not putting more money in. So kind of gets at that whole argument if you're buying that argument.
The other thing too is that I'm sure they're giving them like little buttons that represent the other stacks. I'm not giving them three stacks to hold on the side because, you know, guys be dipping into those stacks, not telling anybody, or sneezing and, like, spilling all the chips together and going, oh, I must have had more chips than that, you know?
Or you're great is to put all those chips in, like, one of those break-in-case emergency kind of glasses and they give you a little ball peen hammer or something, and that would be awesome.
The freaking alarm goes off every time somebody breaks the glass.
That's a new televised event for ESPN there.
Well, speaking of televising events for ESPN, of course, the final table, the main event, is going to be delayed again.
The entire WSOP schedule is pretty consistent with what it was last year. But yeah, so they'll all come back, I think it's November 9th and 10th, somewhere around there, to finish this whole bad boy off so you and I can get our get the money that's due to us, you know, after we sit around for 90 days just living on $900,000 ninth place money.
See, now you mentioned the fact that the ESPN schedule and the World Series schedule is the same pretty much as last year. And I really, really appreciate that. I think that it's a smart thing to do. People can plan their vacations around it. People can plan when the World Series is so they know that they can go to the boss and say, hey, buddy, sorry, I'm not going to be here, you know, July 1st because I'm going to be in the World Series main event or whatever. And it makes it legitimate to me. You know, the series used to go back to May, sometimes June, sometimes July, even once I think it was might have been August start. And that to me is not a consistent, it's not a professional thing to do. And now everyone else can make their schedules around them, all the tournaments, all the casinos. Plus, you know, you think about sporting events, you know, they have a season. You know, I hate to bring up bowling on the show because everybody likes to bust my chops, but, you know, when the bowlers were struggling with their pro tour, the Microsoft guys came in and said, nope, we're going to set a schedule. It's going to be from, you know, September to January or whatever it is, or January, whatever. And they said, that's the schedule. That's the season for bowling, and everyone will get used to it, and they'll appreciate it more. And I think that's the way it should be with the World Series, and I'm glad that they're trying to stick with it that way.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more, and that makes me sick.
Yeah, I was just thinking, that makes me sick, too. Come on, disagree with me.
Well, one thing I don't think we're disagreeing on is that we want to take down Gavin Smith, Joe C. Bacchanali, on this this dangerous poker road challenge, this gauntlet that they've thrown down to other radio and podcasts around the country.
Now, here's the thing, too. I've had correspondence with Joe Seabock, and last night we got to play in the Par and Poker Celebrity Challenge at Tampa Bay Downs, and we hung out with Gavin Smith pretty much all day long and night long, and that's a lot of time to spend with Gavin Smith.
Yeah, that's a lot of Gavin.
And, you know, here's the thing, is he's on a rival website that rivals our Poker Stars, and we won't go play on his site, and he won't play on ours, so we're like, well, what are we going to do? He's like, I don't care. We're gonna play. I don't care. We're gonna do it. We're gonna make this happen. And so we're thinking about it. It might happen at the World Series.
Yeah, yeah. We'll we'll keep in touch with Joe and Gavin, and when you and I are out there, we'll see whether we can get a little heads up horse action going, and of course some silly ridiculous bet will be attached to this battle royale, so we can totally embarrass these three chumps.
Yeah, you know, and some of the things that he was suggesting at dinner last night were pretty remarkable. One thing he did say was, well, the winner makes the other guys stop doing their show for a year.
Yeah, he wants to play for pinks.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, we're not playing for pink slips, pal. we got a deal with Poker Stars that we have to live up to. So he's like, well, if we do that, it's a win-win for me, because I don't even care if I do the show anymore, you know. So he was cracking us up. And then he was doing some other stuff with tattoos in certain areas. And we sort of said, no, we're not going to do that. So
yeah. But we'll come up with something that's befitting a challenge of this magnitude.
But that farm poker last night, that was a lot of fun. We had a lot of good times, a lot of stories coming out of that.
Yeah, yeah, a lot of good, a lot of celebrities in town. Greg Raymer and Dennis Phillips from Poker Stars were there. Of course, Gavin and Karina Jett, and then a bunch of legends of the fields.
Yeah, Lawrence Taylor, Joe Carter.
Yes.
Toronto Blue Jays hero who hit the home run that ended Mitch Williams' career.
I tell you, he was one of the nicest guys there all night. He was
great.
Just
so I played with him, and I almost knocked him out, which I would have gotten a $250 bounty, which would have been awesome. But but I went pretty deep, and then got it all in with a nut flush draw, and thought the guy would lay his hand down, and he did, and he called me, and I got knocked out.
Unbelievable.
But it was cool. I mean, I was down to 150 chips, and I turned it into almost 15 grand.
Yeah, that's very nice. Yeah, that's very nice.
But then I went over and destroyed your table when you were playing cash. That was
thanks. I was destroying it till you sat down. But I still took some cash out of that. But it was going to be all mine, baby, all mine.
Well, from one charity tournament to another one now. You and I, we're just doing everything for the kids.
Yeah, we love the kids.
We're going to be down at Sarasota's One-Eyed Jack's, Sam Minatello's room. And we're going to be playing in Scott Kazmir's charity event. He's the pitcher for the Devil Rays, or the Rays. Sorry, I got to put a dollar in the tip jar.
There you go. Fuck now. Thanks.
But we're going to play in it, me and you. It's February 6th, 7 p.m. Come on down and rail us. And,
or play.
It's for a good cause. It's for the Children's Dream Fund.
Donate some money and make some kids' lives a little better. And play against the guy who pitched in the Game 1 of the World Series that cost me $180.
And you didn't even get to see a victory. Well, speaking of donating money, let's bring up Apes.
Yeah, we gave a whole lot of information on Apes last week that I know people were buzzing about, and we got a whole new set of information to share this week, which is good because Apes is getting started on Wednesday with a 9 p.m. Eastern free roll satellite, Chris. Now, free roll means no scratch you got to put up.
That's awesome. You can just show up and play.
And Poker Stars, however, will be putting up scratch because they will be giving away 28 seats to the very first Apes event on the free roll on Wednesday. That is a great way of getting in to the first Apes event.
Man, that is awesome. Now, remember, the password is anti-up, all one word. But now they're doing something which is we totally agree with. They're doing registration 4 hours before the free roll begins. And also, the free roll will be in the game of the next Apes event, which is awesome.
That's great, yeah. So, if it's Pot Limit Omaha for the Apes event, the free roll satellite will be also in Pot Limit Omaha.
And the reason why it's so cool that they're doing it 4 hours before is because you're really not going to sign up for it 4 hours before and then forget that you're playing in the tournament that night. Whereas if you let you sign up a month ahead of time, you might forget, and then all these dead stacks are out there, and that really brings down a tournament. So I just think PokerStars really does it right, and I'm glad they're doing it. Now, we also want to clarify the guaranteed portion of Apes. The guarantee is the $150 for every free roll. So that guarantees the seats in the next event. That's where the money's coming from. There won't be any guarantee in the actual Apes events.
That's correct. But, so $150, just divide that by the buy-in for the event, and that's how many seats PokerStars will be giving away. So, like I said, for the 5 plus 50, which is most of our events, that would be 28 seats. And then, obviously, a fewer for the $11 8-game mix and the $22 main event championship. But still, free money.
I'm thinking that I'm not going to have to pay a dime to play in Apes this year.
Oh, wow. There's a bold statement that you are going to win all 12 free rolls. Wow, I wonder if we could put a... We may have to come up with some kind of prize for somebody that satellites in all of them. Now, I also need to clarify, too, because some folks on the forum were wondering whether your performance in the free rolls counts towards Apes Player of the Year. No. Sorry.
Yeah, no.
Just be happy with your free seat.
Yeah. That's all you get. But you know what, though? If you win an Apes event this year, we got a little extra bonus for you.
That's right. I mean, you've always been able to win the very nice cash prize put up by the prize pool, right?
Yep.
And then you also get that very coveted, hard-to-find plastic banana trophy with a little fake laminated kind of a label that Chris prints out and then whines at me for how I taped it on there. So you're still going to get the banana, you're still going to get the cash, but you're also going to get an official PokerStars stuffed monkey to keep that banana company. Now, I hope when I send this out to people that the banana or the monkey doesn't eat the banana.
Well, wait a minute.
Transit.
We need to make it very clear here that this is like a cloth fake monkey.
Oh, yeah,
A real stuffed monkey that they're getting from like the Bronx Zoo or anything.
Yeah, yeah. It's not coming from Gabon or anything like that. No, this is a stuffed monkey. But, you know, this is another great little incentive that PokerStars threw in. You know, a lot of our listeners saw this promotion that they're running. And I did too, and I asked them, and they're like, oh, that's great, we'll send you a dozen monkeys. So they're in the mail now. And if you don't know what the monkey promotion is, definitely check out PokerStars.com right now, because what they want you to do is, if you win one of these monkeys on their site or in Apes, is take a picture of you with it in an exotic location, Chris.
Exotic.
And send it to them. And by April 1st, and they're going to pick, I don't know if it's the best one or a couple best ones, but you get 100,000 frequent player points.
Oh, my God.
That's a lot. You can like buy into like one of their great big tournament packages for that, I think.
I think I'll buy a Ferrari Testarossa with that.
No, you can't buy a Ferrari.
Maybe a Porsche or something.
Might be able to get like the rear view mirror or something like that, but but lots of options. But yeah, and you know, of course, when you get your banana and your monkey, as always, take a picture of it and send it to us. We'll put it on the website and in our magazine, and then of course, go ahead and send that that great photo off to the PokerStars folks, so you can get your rear view mirror on that Ferrari that Chris covets.
But we want to talk about the bonus code,
right?
It's for anybody listening and doing it through Apes. PSANTI 50, as in PokerStars, ANTI 50, 5-0, will get you 100% on your first deposit up to $50.
That's not bad.
We don't get anything out of that.
No.
It's just a good way to keep track of who's signing up, but don't worry, we're not getting anything out of that, so feel free to use it.
Yeah, and definitely, also we should say that the brand new Apes website at antiupmagazine.com/apes, that's AIPS for you spelling challenge folks out there. That is up and active. It's got all kinds of cool stuff. It's got all the schedule. It's got links to the Player of the Year standings, a link to the all-time records, which, by the way, if you have a different screen name on PokerStars than you did on the previous host of this show or the tournament series, go on the forum and let those folks know. And we're also going to return the good old chat room, Chris.
Yes, I remember those days. Those were fun days.
We got a link on the Apes site for the chat room, so log in on Wednesday night. Every Wednesday night, it's Ante Up Poker Night on PokerStars.com. Click on the chat room, do a little smack talk before the Apes event or the free roll, or on the other nights, just log in and see where folks are playing. So lots of good stuff at AnteUpMagazine.com/apes, A-I-P-S, including the best thing on that website, Chris.
Yeah.
Is the final revelation, long awaited, of your super secret PokerStars screen name.
You know, it's not that hard to figure out. I mean, it's, you know, I'm a member of the Ante Up Nation, and I love Rush. Figure it out.
Yeah, you're almost like Chloe for 24 to run kind of like password stuff, and she would probably come up with it pretty quick. But,
I left it as encrypted as possible, and it worked up until this deal. But it's, of course, my screen name there, if you haven't gone to the website or checked out our forum at anteupmagazine.com/forum. But my screen name is AUN2112.
Very creative. So
you know, if you want to come and rail me or whatever, go ahead.
All right, are we ready for the news desk?
We are ready.
Poker legend Amarillo Slim Preston was beaten and robbed after he was lured to a field to get a four-wheeler, which was supposed to be collateral on a $3,000 gambling debt owed Slim, the AP reports. Instead, the thief stole $8,000 in cash and an $85,000 ring. Terrible, Chris. Absolutely terrible.
This is not the first time that Amarillo Slim has been beaten up. The guy's as old as Moses. And I believe me, I've gotten my picture taken with him. He is as frail as a balsa wood carving. This man needs to just stay home.
Well, you know, he needed to get his $3,000 back, man. He's a tough guy. I think he can still take you even in this this old age. But all right, TV host and poker aficionado Montel Williams will launch a new TV show in November called the International Team Poker League. According to Casino Gambling Web, players will win their way in through online and live satellites and be placed on teams in Las Vegas for the televised Battle Royale.
I have to wonder, is it a prerequisite that you have to build a big stack and then lose it all on the next day to play in this league? Because that's basically all that Montel does when he plays poker.
Oh, man, ouch.
Now, the guy needs to learn how to keep a chip lead.
More on TV, Poker Stars Pros will no longer appear on the Full Tilt-sponsored Poker After Dark, according to numerous websites.
This really bothers me, because, and I can totally understand why Poker Stars is doing this, because my international sources tell me that Poker After Dark, when it's shown over there, it's just called Full Tilt Poker.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
who the hell wants their players to be on a show that's called Full Tilt Poker? But here in America, you know, I love seeing Barry Greenstein and all these guys playing, so I'm not really happy with the fact that, you know, it's not going to be played. But the big thing was, is I was thinking that we could, if we couldn't do it at the World Series, we could take our horse challenge to Poker Road and then move it there and say, hey, you know what? You guys put us up, Poker Stars put us up, Full Tilt put you guys up 3-3, and we'll have a horse tournament.
Well, we'll have to play that maybe in Poker in the Light of Day. It's a little lesser-known show, but equally as attractive. And then finally, Chris, Mansion Group online subsidiary CircusCasino.co.uk has announced a new initiative to have the game of poker recognized as an Olympic sport, according to recentpoker.com. The plan is for it to initially be a demonstration sport in 2012 and then a main event in 2016.
I can hear the specimen bottles tinkling around the world as they want to pre-test these guys for, like, Pro Vigil and all these drug tests now for poker players.
Now, of course, I think a lot of this was a little bit tongue-in-cheek, right. And, you know, even put up their own dream team of British poker players that would represent the Queen. But, you know, it's still, it'd be cool to see it in the Olympics, and you're right, this would be probably the only way we'd ever get drug testing anywhere in poker is if these folks actually had to go to the Olympics where you had to get drug tested.
All right, let's move on to our final Donkey Gear hotline.
Well, it's not the final hotline.
No, it's the final Donkey Gear hotline.
Oh, yes. Okay, good.
813-448-1120. If you call that number and leave a message and we use it on the show, we'll give you something cool.
Absolutely. A great t-shirt from DonkeyGear.net. So let's see who gets that lucky shirt today.
Hey, Scott and Chris. This is Eric from Ohio. I was recently listening to your podcast, and you were saying how you were taking notes on players and how you have and how you haven't. And I never have done this, and I was playing on Club WPT just with play money. And I played this guy for about a half an hour, taking him for about $20,000-$25,000. So I click on notes and think that I'm typing in, this guy's a donkey, plays real loose, play him anytime you can, took him for $25,000, a real donk. Hit enter, not realizing that I had typed it into the chat box for the game. So I had to continue play this guy heads up. Took him for a few more thousand, but it was definitely made me think of you when it happened. So love the show. Keep it up. Have a great day. Bye.
See, now I've done this. If you can imagine any way you can imagine to do this, I've done this.
It does not surprise me one iota that you've done this.
There have been times where you and I have AIM going while we're doing work, and then I'll like open up a table and start playing, and then I'll type in what I think is to you saying, yeah, okay, we can put that on the cover if you want, and then it shows up on the chat site, and the guys are like, what the hell are you talking about? And then conversely, I send you a message saying, oh my god, you're a freaking donk for calling me.
And then I go, yeah, I know, Chris. Thanks. It's always nice to hear it again, though. But Eric, man, I feel for you, because we've all done that, you know, whether you've accidentally put everybody's email address in the CC field rather than the BCC field, or, you know, when you're railing on some idiot at work and you send it to that idiot instead of the friend that you're talking to. It's just, oh, you just hate that. It's kind of like that want to get away from Southwest Airlines. But Eric, send us your address and we'll get that donkeygear.net t-shirt out to you promptly.
Columbo from PokerWannabe.blogspot.com, and this is another one-minute mystery. The Case of the Hopeless Reed. It's the daily 27K No Limit Hold'em MTT on Full Tilt, and we are closing in on the first break. The blinds are 80 and 160. In this hand, we are a good 2K above average with 6,700 in chips. The under the gun, who also has an above average stack of about 6,200 chips, limps.
Did you see that, sir? Did you notice the limp?
Couple of folds to me in mid position. I have the ultimate drawing hand, ace king suited. I raise it up to 550, seeking to isolate and punish that limper. As expected, it folds around back to him, and is often the case with early position limpers, early in an MTT, he calls. The pot is 1,340, and we see a flop of jack of hearts, 10 of spades, 5 of spades, and the under the gun immediately checks. Now, I don't think you'll be surprised to know I'm normally going to fire a c-bet here, 80% of the time at least. But for some reason this time I suspect something and I check behind. The turn's a 6 of clubs, and he immediately checks again. If he had something, I would have expected a bet here, but with the check...
He is not in control of the situation here.
So I bet about 830 or just over half the pot, and he immediately calls. I wonder what he could be calling with. The river's the king of hearts, and our under-the-gun player moves all in. So, what's the read?
Well, you have to wonder, did the guy, did he limp with aces, or does he really have Broadway here? That is tough.
I mean, you gotta respect the fact that he could have Broadway the way he's played here.
God.
Ace queen, right? Under the gun, that makes sense to kind of limp. And then you sort of got a gut shot, but you got overs.
Well, here's the thing. If he got there, it's our own fault for not c-betting.
Absolutely.
You know, and I understand his thinking about, you know, sometimes it's a little fishy, so we check behind. But you represent a strength in mid position, and he limped. You got to at least see where you're at there, and I think you would have taken it down if you bet enough. Of course, on the turn, we bet 830 and get a call. So, yeah, I think I'm gonna have to fold here, just because he could have anything now, you know.
Well, I'm not gonna end my streak of folding on Women in Mysteries. I think I'll fold it for everyone for the last 78.
Twiff.com lets you skip the middleman and buy your poker chips, tables, gifts, and much, much more straight from the factory at unbelievable savings. Use the famous Twiff countdown to group your purchases with others for free shipping. That's Twiff.com, direct from Asia at Asia prices.
You know, Scott, Matt Savage is a face of tournament poker. He's directed nearly 400 televised poker tournaments. He's got a new gig at the Commerce, and he's a member of the Poker Managers Hall of Fame. Hey, Matt, thanks for joining us tonight.
Nice to be with you.
Hey, you know, we know that you were talking to us earlier this week from the LA Poker Classic, and now you're in the Philippines. You're pretty much the man in demand. What's it like having to travel all over the place like this?
That's great. I mean, obviously, trying to grow the game of poker is what I'm interested in, and growing it in different countries, obviously, with what's going on right now in the industry is really important, I feel. I think that, you know, obviously, if we grow it internationally, that it's going to sustain its growth and become the biggest game in the world.
Matt, tell us a little bit more about the LA Poker Classic.
It is an intense schedule of about 6 weeks of tournaments. It started on January 22nd. Actually, the satellite started a week before that. And it's a tournament that I hold dear to my heart already, even though it's my first year involved, because I feel that, in my opinion, it's the second biggest tournament in the world. You know, the schedule is great. We've added a bunch of different events, and you know, the buy-ins vary from the $3.35 up to the $10,000, and a little something for everybody. And the room itself is just amazing. To have a ballroom with 67 tables and another tent with another 15, and being able to go downstairs makes it great for us that we can accommodate everybody there. And except for what happened in the first event, we do that every day.
So tell our listeners what it was. It was, what, more than 1,500 people played in the first event?
Yeah, nearly 1,600. 1,592 people came in for a $335 buy-in. First place was $125,000. So it was pretty exciting. We ended up getting in like 700 alternates for that tournament. So it made for an interesting day, but we got it all accommodated. And at the end, everybody that seemed to got in was patient and nice, and it was a wonderful event.
Oh, wow, what a big tournament. All right, well, Matt, a lot of people might not know this, but you founded the Tournament Directors Association. Is it your dream to have all the tournaments worldwide follow your TDA rules, and how are we going to get there?
Yeah, for the most part, most major tournaments do follow the TDA rules, and it's kind of a passion for me. When I started the TDA back in 2001, I was told that it could never happen, and right now the TDA is used in most major tournaments around the world. It's something that is easy to use and better for the players, because now they can go into a casino and say, hey, they're using TDA rules. I know I'm going to get the same consistent rules here that I get everywhere else. So we have people looking out to join us in the TDA, and it's never been for any kind of profit, which I'm very proud of, and we work really hard to make sure that people get those questions answered that they have in their home games, in their small tournaments, and in the major ones. So we open up our email box, myself, Dave Lamb, Jan Fisher, and Linda Johnson, to basically a 24-hour support for anybody that has questions on those tournaments.
And, speaking of hard work, I mentioned in the intro that you were inducted into the Poker Managers Hall of Fame. First of all, that was 2003, where is this hall? And to be a little funny, do we really need a Poker Managers Hall of Fame?
Well, I mean, it's a nice honor. At the time, it was done at the World Series of Poker at Binion's Horseshoe. And Harris dropped it because, I guess, they didn't feel like it was important. But, myself and I can't even remember his name now. That's embarrassing. I should remember his name. But Jim Albrecht was also inducted. Oh. So Jim Albrecht was instrumental in founding the World Series and making it what it is today. And I do think it's important it's one of those things where people receive recognition. I believe there's other people out there that have made a positive impact on the industry that someday need to have their recognition shown. So in that respect, I do think it's important. I do think what we do as tournament directors and as poker room managers is important in growing the game.
Do you feel like it'll come back, that someone will say, hey, what's going on? Why isn't this here anymore? Do you feel like there's some sort of effort to bring that back?
No, I doubt it, because the higher-ups at Harrah's don't seem to have any interest in making it come back, because I guess they feel like a lot of people do that it's kind of a joke. So it's okay. It's okay with me. You know, I got that on my resume. You know, nobody else will have that on the resume except for Jim Albrecht. And you know what? It is what it is. I just, like I said, I'm happy with the fact that what we do with the TDA and what I try to do with the structures and schedules and things helps the game along. And that's kind of what I really care about.
Well, related to that, Matt, your website, savagetournament.com, you offer to help people wanting to make tournament poker as a career. How many people approach you for this kind of guidance, and is that offer still on the table?
A lot. there's a lot of people that have said, I want to do what you do. I want to have a career in poker. And, it's hard because, what am I really doing if I'm training people to do what I do? It's kind of, taking away from a craft that I have. But at the same time, I'm totally willing to offer any kind of encouragement I can. Recently, I've been hit with a lot of inquiries from dealers, from floor people, from people in college that want to become what I do. And this generally the people that are most persistent that I end up finding a spot for. I've already placed a couple people that have become tournament directors in their casinos. So anything I can do to help out somebody, I'll try to do. But it's difficult now. I mean, obviously, a lot of these places have hierarchies in certain places. I even placed my right-hand man, Sam Quinto, in in Los Angeles, he's actually the tournament coordinator year-round. While I'll only be in there for the major tournaments, he's going to be there year-round. So I have found spots for certain people, but it's tough because I've worked with so many good people that it's tough to do that.
Wow, San Quinto, isn't that the name of a prison?
Yeah, it sounds like it. I never thought of that, but that's good.
Are you still in the process of, I think I saw you had a blog post about a tournament director training school. Is that still something that's on your plate?
Yeah, I'm actually trying to work on something, but it's going to start in Asia, and then we're going to try and move it international. Over here in Asia, where I'm at now, Philippines and Macau and Singapore and Malaysia and Cambodia and even Vietnam, they're trying to reach out and grab a hold of this poker thing. And so what happens is they don't have anybody to train dealers, staff, or any of that. So we're working on making a school that we can actually do that for them. And obviously once that gets where we want it, obviously Europe and the United States, I'm sure we would get a lot of interest in that. It's one of those things I just haven't had time to do yet, but I hope to do it soon.
Okay.
Well, Matt, a lot of our questions that we get from our listeners have to deal with rulings in poker rooms that they're in and whether they thought the rulings were right or not. Can you, off the top of your head, name a situation that came up in a tournament where you either didn't know what to do or were just sick because you realized later you might have made the wrong decision?
I don't make wrong decisions.
Yes.
I don't know.
Good answer.
It's basically every day. I mean, there's different situations that happen. I can bring up commerce, for example. The players feel that a bet and call on the river, and the player that bet on the river throws his hand away without showing it. A lot of people feel that the other player that called needs to show two cards to win the pot, even though he's the only player with the live hand. I disagree. I went around and talked to a few of the other tournament directors. They seem to agree with me for the most part, but one in particular, Jack Effel at the World Series, feels that the player that bet needs to show his cards as well. So we do tend to disagree, and those are the type of things that when we have those TDA meetings, we try and rectify, get everybody on the same page, and hopefully, even though we may not agree on the ruling, we go with the same one. It's better for the industry as a whole.
Okay, I want to have a little fun with you now. There was a point in poker where we couldn't turn on the TV without seeing you in a tux. I mean, you even had your own TV show. It was called Inside Poker. Do you feel that a tournament director getting his own show was the pinnacle of the poker boom? And by that, I mean, was it the start of the end of the maximum amount of stuff that we could actually take in on the television?
Well, you're forgetting Lucky You, too. I was in that as well.
Oh, that's true.
But I really enjoyed that show because what it was for me, it was good because I had not only all of the players' phone numbers, I could call them up, and I knew a lot of the backstory, so I could get to the bottom of some of the things that players out there wanted to know. But yeah, I mean, that might have been the pinnacle. You never know. Obviously with the UIGA affecting us the way it has, it's been problematic. But at the same time, growing it international, maybe not. So we'll have to see. I think it's yet to be told where poker is going to go. But in the United States, while it's leveled, it still hasn't died. We're still getting big, big fields in these events. So I think that, it's yet to be seen.
There was a monologue at the end of that show that was called On the River. And it was done in this sort of pulp fiction, black and white kind of setting. And now, was that your idea? And how hard was that to come up with one of those every week?
No, it was a producer's idea. And actually, we had people that sent in comments and things that they wanted me to talk about. And it was interesting. I have to go back and look at some of them to remember what I did. But it was definitely interesting.
Now, what did you learn from having to interview poker players for that show? And did you get a newfound respect for those of us who are journalists?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, obviously, getting people to get to the interview, first of all, poker players have certain schedules that they like to keep, and, you have to push them pretty hard, which luckily I was able to do. But I do have respect for you guys, and it doesn't make it easy when people don't show up or, they're having issues or they just took bad beats and they want to tell you about them, and not people out there really don't want to hear about those things.
All right, well, we're going to see how much respect you have for us after I ask you this next question. One of our best friends, and you probably don't know this, is Sam Minatello. He's the poker manager in Sarasota. He obviously has called a lot of tournaments on TV as well. Is it safe to say you guys have a rivalry?
No, I wouldn't say rivalry. I mean, obviously there's a lot of stuff going on, so there's plenty of things to do. There was an event out at the Playboy Mansion that he ran, and everybody was calling me up and saying, you need to run this event. It was a total disaster and all this stuff. And So I tried to get involved the following year, found out that Sam Mantello was the one that was running it. So, I mean, in that respect, I backed off right away because I like Sam. So I would say a healthy rivalry is kind of what we have with him and Jimmy Summerfield and Jack Effel and Jack McClellan. You know, we have a friendly rivalry. But at the same time, I think we're all trying to do the right thing for the game.
All right, so who's a better tournament director, you or Sammy the Deuce?
Definitely me. There's no question.
All right, well, you used to, on that show, you used to put your guests on the spot. And I know we just put you on the spot there a little bit. But you used to have these, like, one-word questions, sort of like word association. So we'd like to do that with you now, if you'd like to do that for a couple minutes. Then we'll be all done.
Okay.
All right, so when you hear the letters TDA, what comes to your mind?
Integrity. And I just... Again, I'm proud of that. I'm proud of the fact that we put something together that everybody's found useful and that players around the world can find consistency.
Jack McClellan.
Jack McClellan, you know, he is historic and he is definitely, he's influenced my career a lot. I respect him and the job that he does, and he's always treated me with a lot of respect himself.
World Series of Poker.
Tradition. Unfortunately, I think some of that's been lost with Harrah's, but at the same time, I think that what they've done over there is great for the game as well. We wouldn't be where we're at today if Harrah's hadn't taken it over, but at the same time, a lot of the players are missing the tradition that was at Binion's, and it's more of a poker factory now, but at the same time, they're driven big numbers, so that's a good thing as well.
Linda Johnson.
Respect. Again, she's basically the one that helped me get the TDA started. Without her, probably never would have gotten done. She's just so nice and willing to take the time to help everybody. I wish that we could do more for her. I'd love to see her in the Poker Hall of Fame as well. I think she really deserves it.
Drunk players.
Drunk players. They don't happen in my tournament nearly as much as they do in others. And I just want to see a lot of that stuff stop. And it's not something that... It can be controlled. I mean, all of these casinos and properties have regulations that they're supposed to be following to get that to stop. I mean, Men the Master plays in my tournament. Scotty Wynn plays in my tournaments. They don't get out of line like they do in others. And, you know, I'd like to see other tournament directors step it up and, you know, get this stuff to stop.
Commerce Casino.
It is an amazing place. Commerce Casino is definitely a place where I was at 2 months ago when I was first coming into there. And I went into the live section, and there was just wall-to-wall people and action. And, you know, the poker pros that were, I thought, out on the tournament circuit were in there playing because the games are so good. I just think it's all about the live games there. And, you know, now with me as tournament director, hopefully we can build up the tournament side of things and make it just the number one poker property in the world.
Sam Mantello.
Sam Mantello. I don't work with him very much. I'd like to work with him more, actually. I think that he's... got a reputation in the industry of integrity and fairness, and that's the kind of people I like to work with. So he's welcome to work with me anytime. Under me, of course.
hand-for-hand play.
It's one of those necessary evils in the game. I've had a lot of luck in my career. Last year in Aruba was the longest hand-for-hand I've ever had. It was about an hour long. But I just think it's a necessary evil. Once you get through that, I try and build structure so well late in the tournament that it is part of the structure, part of the tournament. And I tell you what, you know, a lot of times that's a lot of the strategy you have when you're late in the tournament. People use that to their advantage. And I think it is, again, one of those aspects of the game that's necessary.
Online poker.
Online poker has been so helpful for growing the game. And you know, anybody that can get on the poker online and play poker and eventually get out of their homes and go out and venture into a poker room, just brought a lot of new young players to the game, and I think it was vital to the poker boom.
And the final one, inside poker.
Inside poker. It was a great time for me. I mean, I enjoyed it. I loved the show. Loved working with the pros. I think that I will at some point do another one of those type of things. And it's fun. It's fun to get inside the heads of these poker players and talk about the things that people, I think, out there want to hear.
Okay, Matt, that's it. You know, I really appreciate you. I know it's 9 o'clock in the morning there, and you're in the Philippines. We really appreciate you doing the show today, and hope you have a safe trip back.
Anytime, guys. Give me a call. I enjoy doing the show, and you guys are great.
Excellent. Thanks, man. Take care.
Thanks, Matt.
Okay, take care.
Bye-bye.
It's not just a dealer button. It's more than a tournament timer. It's Pro Dealer Button, and it's a synchronized poker game management system. The buttons talk to each other, so every table in your home game is on the same page at all times. Pre-order yours today at ProDealerButtons.com. Use the code ANNIEUP05 and save 5% on your order.
Did you miss a link on your favorite poker podcast? Or want a preview of the upcoming ANNIEUP magazine? Go to ANNIEUPmagazine.com and subscribe to ANNIEUP's e-newsletter for free. Just click on the subscribe button, and while you're there, subscribe to ANNIEUP magazine. Just $25 gets you 12 issues of your favorite poker magazine delivered straight to your door. Subscribe today and win tomorrow.
Hi, this is Greg Raymer, better known as the Fossil Man, and you are listening to ANNIEUP.
This week's Hand of the Week, greatpokerhands.com Hand of the Week, comes all the way from the UK again.
God, love that.
Totally international show here.
Love it when it's across the pond.
And I'm just guessing it, too, because it came from Dave there, and his email address has .co.uk. He didn't give us an address yet, but I requested it. But so I'm just guessing that he's from the great country of Great Britain.
Yeah,
or a collection of companies.
He could work in the States and use their addresses, but I highly doubt it.
All right, so anyhow, real quickly, he said he's enjoyed listening to our podcast, but recently he says, Chris, that the Hand of the Week seems to have turned into Bad Beat of the Week.
Yeah.
And it's just starting to annoy him.
We tend to go into cycles like that. I understand. People don't like to hear bad beats. Not like you're Antonio Esfandiari, though. Calm down, big guy.
All right, but he's going to remedy the situation. He's just not whining. He's like, you know, here we go.
Sweet.
I'm going to give you a real Hand of the Week, he said.
All right, let's launch right into it.
All right, this is a 2-plus 25-cent online tournament. 9 players in, 15 30 blinds, so we're relatively early in.
Okay.
And our hero here has a stack of 32.95. There's another player in here that has 3,000, and everybody else has no more than half as much as these two guys.
All right.
So he's done some doubling up here, it looks like.
Okay.
All right. And for those of you keeping track at home, the hero's M is 73.22.
You did it off the top of your head, didn't you?
Yeah, exactly. I just the way ANNIEUP abacus comes in handy, especially the decimals.
I think you're an idiot savant. Maybe I'm half right.
All right, the under the gun player folds, and our hero is under the gun plus one with queen of diamonds, ace of spades.
Okay.
Wow. We had an ace queen in the 1 minute mystery, right?
Yeah,
we could potentially.
Yeah, someone had it.
We're assuming maybe. Somebody did.
We hope somebody hasn't. We fold and we're correct.
All right, now everybody tells you don't go broke with the queen in the hand. Ace queen seems to get a lot of people in a lot more trouble than probably any other hand, I'm guessing, even more than ace king.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think a lot of tournaments come to the end with ace king versus queen queen or something. But yeah, ace queen is the one where you get trapped because you don't even hit your queen. Then what? If you've raised and someone else calls your raise, they can easily have you beat. But I'm going to play this hand. I'm the big stack at the table,
and I've obviously got
some respect already for even just my sheer stack. So I'm gonna make it like 90 to go.
Sheer stack. That sounds like a good name for a band. Sheer stack at the Coliseum.
Sunday.
All right, so you're raising here, right?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Raising to 90, maybe 100.
Well, actually, you are channeling our hero who raises to 90. He says it's early, but he doesn't really want to play a big pot out of position. But he says raising 90 chips rarely gets rid of people this early in these type of tournaments, so that kind of makes sense. So he's just going to call and see what happens.
Wow.
And see, this is what I would do.
So I wasn't channeling.
Well, you know, I was channeling him.
Oh, you were, because I was just channeling how to play ABC poker. That's right. What I was channeling. So 3X is normal. So he just calls.
He just calls. And they say, this is how my game has evolved now. To me, I don't know why you'd want to put, with this kind of hand, why you want to put a raise in here. The stack you have, I mean, you could limp here, and if you don't hit well, then you can get out.
I'm sorry. Did you just say with a hand like ace queen first in, you don't see why you'd want to put a raise in?
It's
okay. I'm starting to understand a lot more why you're going to limit.
Okay, but I've been
you don't see
well
why you want to put a raise in. Let's see. Maybe too thin the field to define other people's hands to let them know that you have a
hand. What I'm saying is that you don't necessarily need to take the risk here.
Oh, and so what happens when you hit your queen?
Well, then you hit your queen. That's good.
But you don't know what they have because you didn't raise.
Yeah, but they don't know what you have either.
Okay. I mean, yeah.
It's hidden. All right. Well, all right.
You keep
play
digging
your
hole, and
I'll play my way. Okay. And my way is the way the hero's playing.
Which is why he sent the hand of the week in.
Oh, okay.
Because he needs help.
All right. So he just calls. Let's see. We get a another middle position player calls. Another fold. Another call. The cutoff and the button are out of the way. Small blind calls, and the big blind wraps the virtual table. That's like 4,000 hands in the row. Hand of the week in a row. Right?
Yeah.
I need to come up with something new then.
Yeah, you do.
Wraps the virtual table.
And the other thing, too, is now there's like five people in the pot, and we don't know where we stand with ace-queen.
Right.
We don't know what they have.
But maybe we'll find out soon.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, but if you raise beforehand, you don't really know.
Oh, yeah.
You get a better idea.
We're going to get five callers when we raise in 100?
Well, no, but what you're saying is we don't know where we stand. What you mean to say is we should have thinned the field so we stand in a better spot.
Exactly.
That I would buy.
Well, that's what I'm trying to say is now we don't know where we stand in the hand. We have no idea.
Oh, we've got a flop with 150 chips on the table, and it comes six of diamonds, jack of clubs, queen of clubs. See, bingo, bango, bongo. This is what you do. You limp, and then you hit the top pair, top kicker, and then you go broke.
Exactly.
All right, so the small blind checks, the big blind checks, and now it's on to us. And you're furious here now because we did not raise pre-flop, we did not divine our hand, we did not get rid of people. Now we got top pair, top kicker, and you're pretty miserable, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm not too happy, but I'm going to bet. Is that okay, sir? What? I don't see why we have top pair, top kicker, why we should have to put any money into the pot here. Why take a chance? Somebody could have top two. Somebody could have a set. Somebody could have a straight draw or a flush draw. Who cares? We're just going to check and let them get there for free. Yeah, no, I'm going to bet about 125, 150. I'm going to bet the pot.
Yeah, I'm going to bet the pot here. Yeah. There's too many draws out there, and we left too many people in because we refused to raise pre-flop.
Yeah, because we were playing it smart.
Yeah,
we were exactly. Tricky. We were trapping them. That's Scott's new theory. I'm a great trap player now. Ask him how he's done his last three tournaments.
Ooh,
no, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. So anyway... All right, so what would you bet, Scott? You'd bet pot, right?
I would bet pot, yeah. There's too many. But again, this early on, a pot size bet really doesn't scare too many people. But
you got it.
Makes it mathematically incorrect for a lot of these people. So you got to make it anyhow, right?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, although there are implied odds here that if somebody's going for the flush of the straight.
But they're not implied odds for us, because I'm not paying anybody off if those blinds get there. Or draws
those
get
draws
there.
Get there. Okay, so all right, so we're going
to
bet pot.
They don't know that, but I'm not paying them off.
Well, they know that because you limped.
Oh.
They know that you don't like to take risks, so they're gonna bluff you on the end.
Gotcha.
So what did our hero do?
All right, he says nobody raised pre-flopped, and he's got top pair, top kicker, but that's a really dangerous board out there, Chris.
Yes, it is.
And we're out of position, Chris.
Yes, we are.
So he says he needs to see if anyone has got a hand here, so he bets the pot. Yay! So now we're all in fuego now.
So now he wants to find out if anybody has a hand, rather than pre-flop, when he'd be isolated with one guy with top pair, top kicker. And have this hand won.
I know. Hey, Dave, I'm with you on this here. This is exactly how I'd be playing this hand.
All right. There we go. So we bet pot. What are the other 745 players in this hand do?
All right, we get a fold, and then the next player raises to 300, and our hero says, aha, Chris's favorite min raise.
Min raise. Boo. Well, I don't mind the min raise later on in as the hand progresses. It's just pre-flop. I hate min raise.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're going to have to just call here. I don't think we can raise again. I'm not going to go broke with one pair.
Yep. We'll see. We've got the pot kind of low here, too. It's another thing to consider on the way we play.
Oh, jeez.
But we'll wait and see how the hand plays out to see who...
We're trying to play small ball Danny Negreanu here, so we're just going to call, right? That's what you're telling me? All right, so I would just call here because I want to see the next card is before I commit any more chips.
All right, but before he gets back to us, the small blind calls, and then the big blind gets out of the way. So now it's us. And our hero says, the small blind check calls a bet and raise.
Did he cough too, or was that just, were you channeling
him? Exactly.
It
was said,
it's a little cough.
And
here.
A cough, small blind check calls a blind, bet and raise. These are really good hands of the week that we're getting.
Wow.
Lots of detail.
All right, so we have a min raise, a call, and then another raise?
No.
So it's just
small blind just calling the bet and the raise here.
Okay, well, I'm just calling again because I'm going to have to dodge a bunch of cards. If a real blank comes on the next, I might take this to the end. But if something gets there, like a club or a nine or an eight, you know, or a king, I'm probably out of there.
All right.
I'm not committing a lot, at least.
All right, now our hero says he's realized now that his top pair, top kicker, is not the best hand.
It's not even that it's not the best hand. It's just that it's probably statistically probably trailing
right.
these four cards that he's up against.
But he also says another 150 chips for a pot that has 900 in. He's going to peel one off.
Yeah.
So, again, we're all in agreement.
Yeah.
Well, the world is right.
It's getting 6-1 as money.
All right, so the turn now we have 1,050 chips in there, and the five of clubs come down, so that flush draw gets there. However, the small blind checks to us.
I check. I mean, I realize, okay, yeah, bet, and then somebody has one club in their hand, but it's just now you've picked up another straight draw on top of it. Not that somebody would be in the hand with, you know.
And we got two hands, and one of them was a razor, so yeah, but I'm done here.
Somebody could have 7-8 of clubs. You never know. So, yeah, I'm checking it and hoping to check it down. Check fold is my move
check
here.
Check fold. I like that. All right. So he says the small blind is
checked.
Check called a bet and a raise, and now he checks again after the flush gets there. A little tricky. And our hero says this feels very strong to him, so he's going to check behind and see what the other player does. But at the moment, he's thinking the small blind has the flush.
It's possible.
Yeah, I think so.
It's possible, but then again, if he's in a small blind, he might have small cards. If he already had the flush, he might want to protect it. So, we'll see.
Yeah. But you know, we've got a...
Or he could have been drawn to a straight and got scared by the club.
We've got an out-of-position player calling a bet, and then we've got another player raising. So, probably be taking a shot that somebody's going to bet here.
I wonder if we should have raised pre-flop. All right, so what does the guy who min-raised us do?
All right, so we check, and it gets to the min-raise guy who bets 420 into this pot of 1,050. The small blind calls, and he gets back to us.
Yeah, see ya. Yeah, I'm done. I mean, the only way I call is if I just know what these players are capable of, and obviously he's playing online in a $2 tournament. He doesn't know that, so...
Yeah, because he probably typed the notes in, but accidentally put them in the chat room.
I'm happy with my 3,000 chips that I still have, and I'm letting it go, or maybe 2,800 or whatever it is. So I'm going to let that hand go.
All right. Well, it's hand of the week, and you know, heroes never fold in the hand of the week, right? But
so are you looking for an alternative way to play it?
No, but okay. Surprise, the hero does fold here.
Yeah.
See, last week you were busting our chops that it's not a hand of the week. he folds.
Well, then bust anybody's chops.
So now we've got a hand of the week where the hero makes the correct call, gets out of the hand.
Excellent. I'm happy and I'm proud of him. Even if it's the best hand, you have to throw away the best hand once in a while to be a decent player. And I'm happy that he folded.
You always throw that hand away to me. That makes it even better.
Well, I won't have to worry about it because I know you'll be limping with ace-queen from now on, and I'll just destroy you.
Man. All right, so the hand continues, though, even though our hero is not in it. The pot now is 1890. The river is the two of diamonds. The small blind checks one more time, and the min-raiser checks behind him.
What do they turn over? Well, now you know where we're headed, probably, which sucks.
See, just when we get an alternative hand of the week, then you got to diss it because, you figured it out anyhow.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we got to be ahead because they checked. So somebody's probably got a queen, but a worse queen, and someone's probably got a draw that didn't get there, like a straight draw. That's the way it looks. And I still hold true that the small blind was on a straight draw, not a flush draw, which is why he checked on the five instead of. So he has something like 9-10, king-10. Something like that. So I'm just guessing, but I have no idea.
No, you did pretty well. The small blind has the ace of clubs, jack of diamonds. So he had a middle pair on the flop, and then moved to the nut flush draw on the... not the nut flush draw, but...
He just had a pair of jacks.
Yeah, but he had a flush draw on the turn, though.
Oh, what did he have? The clubs?
Ace of clubs.
Ace of clubs, yeah. So he had a flush draw, yeah. Okay.
So that's consistent with how he played, I guess.
I guess so. Yeah, I guess he was trying to think that.
I guess the bet and the raise on the flop with middle pair is probably not.
Yeah, middle pair when you're seeing all that strength with a bet and a raise. That's.
But I guess you have the ace of clubs.
Couldn't have hoped for a runner at that point of calling, and this guy had to call at least a third of his stack because he didn't even have half of what our guy had.
Yeah, that's a good point. Let me go back to our. Small blind had 1470 to start the hand with.
He called, initially it was, 50 to get in, so that made him 1400, and then he called 300 of his 1400, so he called a fifth of his stack off on middle pair with a bet and a raise before him. That's sad.
All right, and our min-raiser, four of diamonds, six of spades.
Oh, geez. Could you have played that any worse? That's terrible.
Well, no, let's talk about how bad he played it. He put tremendous doubt in our hero's mind, who had the best hand, got him to lay it down because the scary board. He was in position.
Mm-hmm.
Had a pair, so he had some kind of weak outs.
Okay, let me ask you this. I don't even want to talk about that guy. What I want to talk about is pre-flop again. Let me ask you this. Does that guy play the hand if you make it 100 to go?
Of course he doesn't.
Does the small blind play his hand if you make it 100 to go?
I think he will.
There you go. You got ace-jack versus ace-queen. You've got him dominated, and we both hit our other card. You would have taken a huge pot here and would have been heads up with the guy had you raised.
So, in this particular hand, yes.
Exactly. That's the whole point. This is the way most hands come down, Scott.
Yeah.
They don't all get the trap with your ace queen and get queen queen
three.
So
you
three.
Don't totally understand my trapping, and I'm not going to tell you because it's because
we played so many tournaments.
It's
together.
Profitable for me to keep you guessing, but we are different types of players. So
I know
you would suffer tremendously playing my way, and I have suffered tremendously for years playing your way. I finally found a comfortable spot, and
I everybody has their own style. I'm just saying that clearly in early position you're gonna want to normally raise with this type of hand, not say, well, why would I want to take a chance with ace queen? I mean, that doesn't make any sense. Here's exactly why. He just lost 400 chips.
Here's the one axiom to my play that I'm going to give. This is the last axiom I'm going to give because we have no limit tournaments coming up.
That's
for
right. We don't want to give away your secrets.
But it is, I think, and has worked well for me that I can limp with ace queen if I'm willing to lay it down on the flop.
Mm-hmm.
And here's an example from a tournament I played last night. I had pocket kings. It was raised pre-flop before it got to me. I called. Instead of re-raising, which is what I normally would have done, mm-hmm. which anybody would have normally have done, ace hit on the flop, bet, I mucked without one thought, no problem.
And the guy had queens.
No, it's up against two aces, but if you're not able to lay down ace-queen on a dangerous board like this, then yes, you need to raise pre-flop. But if your game allows you to not think of that as a big premium hand that you have to get money from, you're able to lay it down.
So, you still play the other way as well while you're playing. You'll still raise with that once in a while. You're not going to always just limp with like ace queen.
I don't know. I pretty much don't limp now, but I'll limp with other worse hands, and bet on flops when I didn't miss. So it works both ways.
Look for Scott in the Social Security line with all of the other old biddies coming up next month because he's retired and joined the AARP because his way of play fits right in with the old grannies.
Oh, I see a couple last longers coming up in the Apes free roll on February 4th and the first event of Apes on February 11th.
Stay tuned for that. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We will see you at the tables. Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.